Rummaging through the book bag on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Rebecca Wee.
And I'm Don Wooten. Our readers' comments are our guests today on Scribble. Well, Rebecca, people took us seriously.
I know, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a little frightening.
No, it's good.
But people are listening to this, and they are responding to our request for comments. And by the way, if we haven't heard from you, you can contact us at, this sounds obvious, contactscribble.1014@gmail.com. Again, contactscribble.1014@gmail.com. And several people have contacted us, and I thought we'd spend a little time today reviewing their comments. And by the way, I should mention that if you don't want us to mention your name, you should alert us. I realize you want to avoid the public opprobrium for admitting that you listen to the program.
No. But
so, from whom have we heard?
Well, let's see. I also want to just say ahead of time, we apologize if we mispronounce your names. But if the names appear on here, for right now anyway, we'll read them. So, we got a comment from Merrick Castellan about the fiction author Jeff Long, which she recommends. The Wall, Year Zero, and The Descent. And the comments are that those are his best for me so far. Twists abound, great characters and plots and subplots. Subject matter varies a great deal. A talented guy who deserves a lot more attention. So that we thank you for. I don't know those works. So,
and we don't know for sure the gender of Merrick.
That's true.
That could be he or she, but Merrick it is.
Yes, Merrick. It's a lovely name.
Don't you love names like that?
I do.
That can go almost anyway.
I think it's great.
I've discovered Jordan is a gender-neutral name, and they're all kinds.
Mm-hmm. And that's just grown. It's great. It's
yeah,
really
but that
nice.
Means you're not sure.
I'm never sure of anything anyway. I can just ride with that.
Okay.
All right, then there is one from Daniel Tollerud, and he says that after some setbacks, he decided to read The Road Less Traveled, The Art of Loving, and Living, Loving, and Learning. And the comments are very familiar. I was in need of spiritual growth and renewal and a more thorough understanding of love relationships. So then the order of the authors: The Road Less Traveled, Scott Peck, Leo Biscaglia was The Art of Loving, and Eric Frome's Living, Loving, and Learning. I've read many books on recovery, spirituality, and psychology. The insight now is to read less and participate in life and what I've learned. Which
That's
is
very nice.
Nicely put.
Books can do that to you, you know?
Yep.
They really can.
That's the idea, right? That we learn something and then we're better for it and we go out in the world and...
And it's not only books, we accept critiques and comments.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we got one from Mary and Mark David Saver.
Yes. Says that after the interview that we did a few weeks back with the Dante Scholar, my husband checked out the availability of the Divine Comedy and made sure to get the correct translator. Do you remember which one he recommended, Don?
I don't remember the one, but a friend showed me a copy that she had obtained with the translator that he had recommended.
Yeah. Yep.
I got a comment from a lengthy one from Teresa LaBella. Teresa and John have been on the program before, but they're now living in Nova Scotia. And she has written another book. She's indie published 3 more novels since Heartland in January of 2015. Her latest is Capital Strings, which was published in April.
Okay.
It was set in Canada's capital city of Ottawa post-pandemic, and the theme and plot center on the political and societal divisions and dangers associated with the entrenched positions for and against gun control. Here is a review. C. Hope Clark, author of suspense novels I met while attending the Midwest Writing Center's David R. Collins Writer Conference, wrote in her review, "I was about 4 chapters into this book when I caught myself wishing the story was on a screen. Cable, movie, doesn't matter. It has that much potential for a strong visual story. The political thriller, refreshingly set in Canada instead of Washington, has the pace of Scandal and the complexity of West Wing and House of Cards combined."
Nice.
Not a bad review, Teresa. And the novel is Capital Strings, and it's available, I'm sure, on Amazon.
Oh, excellent.
And we have one more here we should work in.
Yes, Robert Essary, Jr. wrote and said that books weren't necessarily part of the thing he was raised on. He said, he writes, "The only time I ever read a book was to complete a book report for school." That will be familiar to others, I think. Then he says, fast forward to a blue-collar man in his 40s. Books still haven't been an important part of my life other than for reference. And then after hearing a discussion about the history of the Quad Cities here on WVIK, I heard a person mention a book called The Banditti of the Prairie by Edward Bonney. And he writes, "I found the discussion interesting and wanted to hear or read more, so I bought the book. I started to read it, ended up reading that book cover to cover in one day. For the first time in my life that I've ever read a book cover to cover in one day." Lots of us haven't done that, you know.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Pretty impressive. So I absolutely could not put it down. I've never had a book grab me in a way that that one did. Almost always reads nonfiction. So, this is a nice detail. Recently become a hobby beekeeper. And so currently I'm in the middle of Langstroth on the Hive and the Honeybee by Reverend L.L. Langstroth. I have never heard of this, but I like the beekeeping world as well. I learned it through Sylvia Plath's poetry, but he says that this book, many beekeepers call it the beekeeping Bible. So you want to learn something new, there you go.
Well, apparently that Banditti of the Prairie was a discussion I had with Roald Tweet.
That's right, yep.
I read that, 70 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I was working in Muscatine in radio, and there was a delightful lawyer. Oh, I wish I could remember his name. He wrote me a letter, and he said I was helping a woman do a recipe show.
Oh, okay.
And he said, "I heard your recipe involving beef hearts, and I wondered, how do you catch the bees?"
I was so
amused by that. I contacted him, and he's the one who put me on the Banditti of the Prairie.
Okay.
And it is a story about the people who killed Colonel Davenport.
Oh.
The man who tracked them down and how they were brought to justice. And I can show you the spot in Rock Island where they were hung.
Oh, my.
And, it's a fascinating book.
So is it considered creative nonfiction? Or
no,
is it
it's just an account of his.
It's just an account. Okay.
And, I've often wondered how accurate is Bonney, because I don't have any other historical references.
Yeah.
But I'm inclined to take his book as is, because as a as Robert says, it is engrossing, and it takes you right through to the end.
Yeah.
And the murder of Colonel Davenport is one of the central events in the Quad Cities.
Wow.
So it's murdered on July 4th in his home on Arsenal Island, which is preserved. Not all of it, because he had a big storage area along with it. He was a trader. But he was not able to go with his family to the big July 4th celebration in downtown Rock Island. And when they were gone, I think three people rode over from the Davenport side to the island.
Wow.
And convinced he had money, beat him up, and in the process killed him.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, but Bonnie found him. That's quite a story.
Yes, it is. Well, especially for anyone who wants to know about the history of this place, you know, the Quad Cities. That's wonderful.
It's interesting. You know, Rock Island used to be the center of the Quad Cities. That has since shifted over to Davenport. And there's a fascinating story about how the names are all mixed up. That it's a long story. I won't go into it. It was Farnhamsburg, and then when they were going to put together two elements and make it into one town, they were going to call it Davenport after Colonel Davenport.
Oh.
But there was a fellow who in the Illinois legislature who objected to that, and so they named it Stevenson. And LeClaire, who was a good friend of Davenport, was establishing a town across the river, which was going to be LeClaire, but he felt bad for his friend Davenport, so he named it Davenport.
Oh, I see.
And then Moline used to be Rock Island Mills. And then there was a place out near Milan that were setting up as Rock Island City, and the people in Moline decided this is one Rock Island too many. We need a different name. And so they asked a schoolmaster, you know, what should it be? So he gave them two names, as I recall. I think it was, Esperanza or something about the Star of the West. And the other was Moulin, the French word for mill. And they said, let it be Milltown. So it became Moline.
I had no idea.
And when Robert E. Lee was first in the Army, he came out here to plot a territory up at Hampton, and he named it Milan, or Milan.
Oh, my.
I tell you, the names have been shuffled around in this community. It is a fascinating story, and I think if you go on the internet, you can find the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. I had no idea. When I came here 20 years ago, I was pretty fascinated by what felt to me like just one big city, right? And not huge, but that all four of them were kind of one. And then I learned very quickly from some neighbors that, I live in Illinois and I don't go to Iowa, or I live in Iowa and I don't go over there. And I kept thinking, really? How?
We had a big project to try to bring the Illinois Quad Cities together to kind of offer solid competition to Davenport, which has pretty much dominated the area. And they attract all the business and so on. They have land that they can expand into. But the counterweight of that is Moline, which has John Deere. And so Moline has been a pretty good competitor. But at one time they decided to have a referendum on combining Rock Island, Moline, East Moline, Silvis into one super city. And they would remain boroughs. We'd have four different boroughs. And that would give the Illinois Quad Cities real heft. Well, it came close to passing in Rock Island and failed everywhere else dismally. But the real fun was people suggesting names for it. And Bill Hewitt suggested we call it West Geneseo.
Oh,
but we're moving far away from books, aren't
we?
Yes.
Well, hey, the history's interesting.
Oh, there's so many interesting things about the area, and Tweet was on this all the time.
Exactly. I was thinking that was his thing. You know, he knew so much.
And let me extend his complaint that no one has written an adequate biography of the city of Bettendorf.
Ah.
And he says, the material is there, someone ought to do it, but no one has done it.
Interesting. Okay.
So if you want to fulfill Roll Tweet's last wish, write a book
on
Bettendorf.
Write a book about Bettendorf. That's a good project for some students, too.
It'll take some research, but it's a very interesting story.
Yeah. Yep.
And Bettendorf has really flexed its muscles in recent years. Mm-hmm. It used to be strictly a bedroom community, but they're working hard to overcome that.
Yeah, and to have some kind of I remember my son when he was pretty young and kind of trying to get the four cities straight and said, there isn't any downtown Bettendorf. There's nothing there. And that's changed.
Oh, yeah.
That's changed a lot. And
well, what people don't realize, originally the Tri-Cities were Rock Island, Davenport, and Moline. And somebody started calling them the Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't including Bettendorf in that. They were including East Moline.
Oh, I see.
That was the original Quad Cities.
Okay.
And then there was a big drive to make it the Quint Cities.
I remember seeing on buildings, you know, every once in a while you'd see Quint Cities, and I thought, I don't know what the other one is.
We had the first press club, a dinner, years and years ago, and there was a skit I wrote for it at the end, where the mayors of all the different towns were coming in to decide what to do. You know, the next step after Quint Cities was Sex Cities, and we didn't want that, so what will we name it? And it wound up as kind of a farcical thing. But anyway, books. You've been reading any books you enjoy?
Oh, yes. I've kind of gone back in time a little bit to Spencer Rees, who's a poet. I learned of his first book that came out in 2004 and was called A Clerk's Tale. And it made a big splash at the time because the poet Louise Gluck had discovered the poem and got the New Yorker. I think she talked the New Yorker into print. It took up the whole back page, which poems never do. They always get their tiny little spot somewhere in the New Yorker. But he was a very quiet, introverted sort. So he wasn't sure what to do with all the attention that came his way from that book. So he didn't write anything else for about 10 years. Yeah, because then his Road to Emmaus came out. That was another collection of poems in 2014. And the reason I kind of got thinking about him again is this tiny little book, which you can see and the listeners can't. He's also a painter, and he decided to make what he's calling a poet's painted book of hours. So he took a whole bunch of his watercolor paintings, which are in this book, and then he gathered quotations and passages from other writers and painters and people whose work he admired. So it's set up to be like a book of hours. Starts with matins, I believe. The sections are organized. And then he'll have, it's called All the Beauty Still Left.
That's the title of it?
Yeah, All the Beauty Still Left, and A Poet's Painted Book of Hours.
And what's his name again?
His name is Spencer Rees, R-E-E-C-E. And I'll just give you a couple of little comments quotations for what he put in here. The first one is lines of Louise Gluck, the poet who sort of launched him on his writer's way, I guess. The master said, you must write what you see, but what I see does not move me. The master answered, change what you see. So he just has, dawn. You know, the whole idea of a book of hours, which are the devotional prayers that are offered throughout the day, popular in the Middle Ages, right, that you would stop at different points in the day and pray. And so there are psalms, there are prayers, and he's just organized them into the day. And he's got everyone from Marilyn Monroe, Oscar Wilde, Henry Cole. Henry Cole's is just a single line. It says, "If tenderness approaches, run to it."
I'll buy that.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, they're wonderful. And then he's got his paintings next to them. He's got David Hockney, the painter David Hockney. And the quotation is, "A lot of people don't look very hard," which is very true when you think about. He's got Yo-Yo Ma. Here's one by Yo-Yo Ma. "Each day I move toward that which I do not understand. The result is a continuous accidental learning which constantly shapes my life."
You know, that by itself is worth the book.
It's just wonderful.
All the beauty still left, huh?
Yep. And so you get a bunch of his small paintings. The intro, he talks a little bit about how his poetry he was willing to be public with, but that his painting is has been very, very private. So it's kind of a treat that he...
Well, here's something very contemporary. 101 Arabian Tales, How We All Persevered in Peace Corps Libya. This is by Randolph W. Hobler, who was in the Peace Corps early on and was sent to Libya. This was the second contingent of Peace Corps people who went to Libya, and I think by far the most successful. And he takes you through the whole process. The first 100 pages or so are their preparations.
Oh, wow.
And I must confess, at some point, it sounds like a bunch of college guys pranking about.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, they decided the women should be treated separately because of the, in the Arab nations, that was just the way it was.
The mixing, yeah.
And then when he gets to Libya, they are separated into different communities. And early on in the book, let me see if I get it here, there's a map of Libya, and it shows where they were concentrated, most of them up by the Mediterranean Sea, but some of the most interesting ones are right down in the middle left, Ubari, Kuta, Ardiri, Sebha, Samnu, Muzuk, and one way over in the southeast, Altaj. And he talks, he took the time to interview all the people.
Oh, my.
And he goes from one story to another. It's the most readable thing that you can imagine. It just goes so easily. I started and I thought, well, I'll pause here. And I was a third of the way through the book. Huh. It just goes on and on. But he encounters all sorts of interesting problems. But he found the people of Libya so easy to get along with. And as a matter of fact, he dedicates the book to them, to the villagers of Algala, El Jersan, Libya, for their heartfelt generosity, unstinting hospitality, and deep human goodness. He takes us all the way through. He had to have a hernia operation. And so he had to go to Tripoli for that. And we get all the details. Also, he met a young woman named Jean, and for a while it looked as if that was going to be a permanent thing, but it did not work out.
Hmm.
Here's something from Arab astronauts. "One night in early May, strolling through dark downtown Algala with friends, I looked up, pointed at the moon, and said, 'What's that?' 'Why, Mr. Randy, that's the moon.' 'Really? We don't have that in America.'" You can, obviously a college guy.
Uh-huh.
But then he talked about the moon landing, and that was something that was fascinating. There are some people who just couldn't believe it was happening. He said Tom Firth asked his students if they'd like to go to the moon. No. "Okay, then would you like to go to America?" No. "Well, then, would you like to go to Paris?" They all shook their heads. "All right, would you like to go to Tripoli?" "Well, maybe." They were content to stay. But then he brought up the topic about what's going to happen when you go to the moon. And they thought, "Oh, Arabs on the moon, sure." And I have a question. "What? How are they going to pray?" "What do you mean, how are they going to pray?" "How are they going to pray up?" "Pray up?" "Yes, Mecca will be up." So if you're on the moon praying on your knees, you won't be facing Mecca, a room full of quizzical looks. Okay, further explanation is needed. You see, when you're on the Earth, the moon is up there, but when you're on the moon, the Earth is up there. Oh, no, Mr. Randy, the Earth is down here. I tried to demonstrate, but more adamant, thrusting their hands to the ground. Oh, no, the moon is, the Earth is down here. But it was interesting to read all the way through that, and I would recommend it. I think it might be self-published, but
say the title
again. It says Lulu. But you can get it on Amazon, I'm sure. It's 101 Arabian Tales, How All We All Persevered in Peace Corps Libya. Huh. And it is an easy and delightful read of very human situations in extraordinary circumstances. So that's a book I would... Boy, you know, we're running out of time here. I wanted to... Hate to take up the time, but there are a couple of books out on the Constitution you ought to think about. The Cause, The American Revolution and Its Discontents by Joseph J. Ellis, and Power and Liberty, Constitutionalism in the American Revolution. The fact that we have a country was a chancy thing, because in the beginning you had... separate colonies, many of them had their own constitutions, and they were not much interested in getting together. And it was Washington, Jefferson, Madison especially, who figured we had to make one country out of this, but it was a near thing. The Constitution did not solve all the problems. It left slavery intact. In order to accommodate the southern colonies, and that has been a curse on the country ever since. And all the things that have been done, the disfiguring things to keep the southern colonies in, bother us to this day. But they point out that the divisions that they had at the beginning are still here, that the things that separated us are still separating us now. And if you want to look into this, The Cause concentrates more on the revolution and why people were unhappy and why they rebelled. And then you also get The Power and Liberty by Gordon S. Wood, which gives you a fresh view of the Constitution. Well, we've just about used up all our time, but all right. I want to, and I talk too much myself, but... Let's remind you that you can contact us and tell us I talk too much, or give us your recommendations on books and your comments on just about anything. You go to contactscribble, 1014 at gmail.com. It's just that simple. So if you would do that and let us know your recommendations about books, or any comments you'd care to make, we'd love to hear from you. Once again, that's contactscribble1014@gmail.com. And with that, it's time to head for the exits. And I'm Don Wooten with Rebecca Wee. We've enjoyed your company today and would like to have it again next week for the next edition of Scribble.